The year is 1998. The school year is just starting. You've got your backpack already. You're bummed out that summer's coming to an end. Only a couple days left. When suddenly, September 8th, you find out about this new cartoon. Maybe your friend told you about it. Maybe you found it yourself. Either way, you're hooked. Within a matter of days, everyone knows about it. And as the first day of school comes and goes, and you see your classmates daily, one thing is certain. Pokemon fever has arrived. It's everywhere. Everyone's talking about it, and it's not even at the peak yet. September 28th, just a few weeks after learning about this new cartoon, there's suddenly a video game for it. Everyone was getting this game. But if you were like me, your parents didn't just buy you any game you wanted. Luckily, I had a friend who did get basically anything he wanted, and on his birthday in early October, he got both Pokemon Red and Blue versions. Eager to be the first to catch them all, he let me borrow one of his two brand new games on two conditions. The game was still his, and any Pokemon that he didn't have in his game, I'd need to trade him. Fair enough. If that's all I needed to do to ensure I got to play the game and be a part of it with everyone else, I'm in. Those months between October and the end of the year were full of adventure, schoolyard rumors, secrets, new friends, and much more. Finally, on January 9th, 1999, the final piece of the Pokemon Trinity arrived, cementing it as an absolute powerhouse, the Pokemon trading card game. Now, it was truly everywhere. Everyone had cards, everyone was trading, even the cards themselves had rumors. I remember when the whole Yellow Cheek, Red Cheek, Pikachu card debate was going on, the whole Misty's Tears thing for people who got Japanese cards, so many fantastic memories around this franchise. I actually didn't get my first pack of cards, however, until May 19th, 1999. The reason why I remember the date so well was because it was actually the day Star Wars Episode 1 hit theaters. I got to stay home from school that day to go see it, and while we were waiting in line, my mom took me, my friend, and my sister to a card shop for something to do during the long wait, and bought us each a pack. I got Venusaur, my friend got Nidoking, and my sister got Blastoise. The early days of the Pokemon franchise are something that I hold very close. Much like how I remember my dad setting up the Nintendo 64 for me to play Super Mario 64 for the first time when I was bedridden after surgery, I also have fond memories of him bringing home Pokemon VHS tapes that I would watch repeatedly, the first being The Mystery of Mount Moon. Anyway, I know you're all here for the iceberg, so let's get on with it. I'd just like to give my own personal story about the franchise before dissecting the iceberg, so thank you for listening to my rambles. This iceberg is actually two icebergs combined, as I felt both had unique topics I wanted to talk about, so I mashed them together. By doing so, of course, that makes one very large iceberg. So, grab a snack, get comfy, this is going to be a long video. Let's get started. Pikablu. Let's start this off with one of the biggest rumors in the early days of Pokemon. Pikablu was a rumored evolution of Raichu, and was also thought to be a water-electric type. During the late 90s, the internet was still in its infancy, and information for games released in other countries wasn't so quickly translated and discussed as it is today. So, when images of Meryl first started to appear from both the Japanese release of Pokemon the First Movie, as well as Pokemon Gold and Silver, which was released in November of 1999 in Japan, and not released in the West until 10 months later, this gave Western Pokemon fans 10 months to speculate and throw rumors around. It also didn't help that a trainer in Cinnabar Island in Pokemon Red and Blue, when spoken to, would claim that his Raichu evolved. He doesn't say into what, but it definitely doesn't help, as Raichu doesn't actually have an evolution, of course, and an NPC saying that their Raichu evolved could definitely be seen as a hint to potentially being possible. To add fuel to the fire even further, before Pokemon the First Movie came out, the trading card company Topps released cards with scenes from the movie and descriptions on the back, which falsely calls Meryl Pikablu, and refers to Snubbull as Budu, which is his Japanese name, of course. If they only called Meryl by his Japanese name, which, well, is Meryl, then that would have potentially cleared things up, but I have a feeling an employee at Topps probably figured that most of the Pokemon names got changed from Japanese to English, and jumped the gun, assuming Meryl was going to be Pikablu in the U.S. Pikablu is also something that many fans online back in the 90s refer to as one of the Poke Gods, which we'll get into later, so, you know.
More on that later.
SSN Truck. In Pokemon Red and Blue, if you get cut, then white out on the SSN, you'll bypass the cutscene in which you leave the ship and it sails away. If you do this and continue the game until you get Surf, you can return to the SSN. Only this time before boarding the ship, but right after passing the guard who checks your ticket, you can surf on the water. If you surf to the right, you'll reach a platform that has some boxes on it, as well as a truck. This truck is a strange anomaly in the game, as textures in games of this size are often reused to save on space. But this is the only location this truck appears, and it's really only ever seen if you perform these specific actions. This led, of course, to many rumors back in the late 90s, specifically if you returned to the truck with strength and pushed the truck, you would find Mew and be able to fight and capture it. Funny enough, it seems as though Nintendo must be aware of the rumors this truck spawned, as in Fire Red and Leaf Green, if you examine the truck, you get a lava cookie. And if you examine the truck in Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee once a day, you can obtain a free revive. Behind Bill's House. In Pokemon Red, Blue, Yellow, Gold, and Silver, when you reach Bill's House above Cerulean City, you'll notice that there seems to be space behind it where you can walk. This led many gamers to believe that you can somehow reach this area, and that it leads to a location referred to as Bill's Secret Garden that many have speculated either has an area where you can catch the starter Pokemon, as there's no way to obtain them throughout the game, except through trading, of course, or that this is where you'd find the Pokegods. Jinx. Jinx is a Pokemon introduced in Generation 1. Referred to as the human-shaped Pokemon, Jinx, well, I mean, I guess Jinx resembles a human, but like, does that look like a human to you? Well, apparently some people thought so. Early on, Jinx's design was heavily criticized in the West for being a racist caricature, resembling blackface. Since then, Jinx's skin is now purple. Jinx is actually based on the Yuki-onna or Yama-uba, both spirits in Japanese folklore, and is possibly also inspired by Ganguro fashion in Japan. GS Ball. The GS Ball first appears in Generation 2 in both the anime and the games. In the games, the GS Ball is obtained by linking your Game Boy to your mobile phone via the Pokemon Mobile Phone System GB. Unfortunately, this was only available in Japan, only on Crystal version, so Celebi remained unobtainable to Western gamers via legitimate means for quite some time. Of course, that didn't stop people from using Game Sharks to obtain it. Back to Japanese Crystal, when the GS Ball is obtained, go to Kurt in Azalea Town, and he'll take the ball from you. Return to him the next day, and he'll return the GS Ball to you. Next, go to Alex Forest, and use the GS Ball in the shrine within the forest. This will start the encounter with Celebi. In the anime, the GS Ball is introduced during the second season, where Ash obtains the ball from Professor Ivy. Ash eventually gives the ball to Kurt in the anime, and it's never seen or heard of again. Apparently, the writers just dropped the plot point intentionally, as Celebi ended up being used in a movie, so the GS Ball connection was discarded in the series. Gengar is Clefable's shadow. A very popular fan theory dating back to the early days of the franchise. This theory states that Gengar is either Clefable's shadow, or is simply an opposite of Clefable, which, I mean, yeah, I can see why. Their body types are definitely very similar, and many of their Pokedex entries seem to imply their opposite nature. There's really a lot to this, surprisingly, so I'll leave it at that. It's pretty surface level anyway, so I'm sure many of you have heard of it enough already. The third starter. Whenever you select your first Pokemon, and your rival inevitably chooses your starter's weakness counterpart, there's always a third Pokemon left behind. In many cases, you can go back and see that that Pokemon is still sitting on the table, unclaimed, which is kinda sad. Though, in some games, like Ruby and Sapphire, you never see the third starter again, so who knows? Maybe someone claimed it as their traveling companion. In Red and Blue versions, there was apparently supposed to be a fight with Professor Oak, in which he uses the last remaining starter, but this was removed. But you can implement it back into the game with a Game Shark. Ditto is a failed Mew clone. In Pokemon Red and Blue, as well as its remakes, when you arrive to Cinnabar Island, you come across the Pokemon Mansion. This is the only location in the game where you can find the Pokemon Ditto. Scattered around the mansion are diaries of those who resided here long ago, telling of an expedition to find the Pokemon known as Mew. This eventually brings about the creation of Mewtwo, but given the changes in what the diary says from game to game can change the context of how Mewtwo came about, as well as the canon too, I suppose. In red, blue, green, yellow, fire red, and leaf green, the diary specifically states that Mew gave birth, and that the scientists named the newborn Mewtwo. In Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee, this is changed to, we obtained a new Pokemon from Mew, which could mean any number of means to obtaining this new Pokemon, from birth to attempting to replicate it, and so on. This leads many to believe that Ditto was a failed attempt at cloning Mew, given that it has the ability to transform, and the only other Pokemon capable of transforming is Mew itself. They both have the same shiny color, and also have the same weight of 8.8 pounds. Of course, that's only an early rumor in the series, and since, Ditto has been found all around the world in different regions, so really, who knows? An interesting thing to note, however, is that in red, green, blue, yellow, fire red, and leaf green, it specifically states that the jungle where Mew is found is Guyana, South America, which is a real place. Interestingly enough, this is taken out of Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee, so it basically just says we discovered a new Pokemon deep in the jungle, without any other reference to the location. Either way, this real-life reference to a place that exists in our reality is something we'll talk about later, so...
More on that later.
Ash is in a coma. Oh man, okay, so this is another old theory about the anime. Basically, it states that during the first episode, Ash is actually hit by Pikachu's mass thunderbolt attack against the Spearows, causing Ash to fall into a coma. This explains why he's forever the same age and all those other anime tropes, as well as Officer Jenny and Nurse Joy always looking the same. This theory goes pretty deep and gets quite ridiculous, sort of like the other kid cartoon fan theories, like Rugrats all being in Angelica's mind, or Ed, Edd n Eddy taking place in Purgatory. It's just for fun, and nothing really more than that. Lavender Town. Lavender Town is a small town in northeast Kanto. It's a very strange town, known for its ghosts and spooky happenings, which I assume is why it's on the iceberg. In Gen 1, it's home to the Pokemon Tower, which is a massive structure that serves as a gravesite of sorts for Pokemon. I never really understood how this works as a kid, because, like, it's multiple stories tall, and every floor is filled with graves. How are you burying the dead in a structure that has multiple ascending floors? I thought maybe it was like they're cremated and their ashes are put in a columbarium, but I have no idea. And still to this day, I can't make any sense of it, and it's all speculation, really. Maybe, like, if a Pokemon dies, it can still go into its Pokeball, and they bury the Pokeball? I don't know. Anyway, in Gen 2, the tower gets turned into the Radio Tower. That must have gone over very well with the owners of the Pokemon laid to rest there. Growing up, I lived near a park that was formerly a cemetery. The city was unable to contact all the family members of those buried there to get permission to move the bodies. So, to this day, there are many bodies still buried at this seemingly simple little park with no headstones where they were buried, and only a memorial wall in the center of the park with their names on it. Just thought that was kind of related to the topic, but I digress. Anyway, the remains of the Pokemon in the tower were all moved to the House of Memories, also known as the Soul House. Apparently, there are a bunch of chambers below this house that only Mr. Fuji can access, so... I mean, at least now they're underground. Makes a little more sense. There's also, of course, the famous Lavender Town song, but we'll get into that a bit later, so...
More about later.
Chinpokomon. Chinpokomon refers to the Season 3 episode of South Park in which the show parodies the Pokemon craze with Chinpokomon. As was the case in the real world with Pokemon, the kids of South Park are obsessed with Chinpokomon, and it all ends up being a plot by the Japanese government to convert American kids into child soldiers. And if you want, you can look up what Chinpokomon means. Just Google it. Yeah. Cubone is Kangaskhan's baby. Cubone is, of course, known for wearing the skull of its dead mother. But what if there is no dead mother? Would the Cubone not wear a skull? Would it have been born as something else? Would it evolve into something else? A popular rumor in the early days of Pokemon was that Cubone was actually a baby Kangaskhan who lost its mother. I could definitely see the connection, as their designs are very similar, especially the design between the baby Kangaskhan in the pouch and Cubone. But the strange thing is that why does putting the mother's skull on cause Cubone and, in connection, Marowak, to no longer grow into a Kangaskhan, just because of a skull on its head? Well, simply put, it's because they aren't connected. It's really just a coincidence. Surfing Pikachu. The concept of Surfing Pikachu has taken many forms throughout the series. In Pokemon Stadium, if you complete the Master Ball division of the Round 2 Prime Cup with a Pikachu in your party, Pikachu will be taught Surf at the end, allowing you to use Surf with Pikachu in Yellow, Gold, Silver, and Crystal, complete with a custom animation when using Surf on the Overworld with Pikachu. Surfing Pikachu has appeared in later versions as well, being given in Gen 3 if you deposit 1,499 Pokemon into Pokemon Box Ruby and Sapphire, and is also obtainable in Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon by beating the high score of Big Boss in Mantine Surfing, and lastly in Sword and Shield, simply by teaching Pikachu Surf with TR-04. A trading card of Surfing Pikachu exists. In the anime, a Surfing Pikachu named Puka appears in the Season 1 episode The Pikahuna, and you can make a Pikachu stand on the surfboard in Pokemon Snap for a special picture opportunity. A Surfing Pikachu has also appeared in the manga a couple times as well. I wouldn't be surprised if I missed an appearance or two, because Surfing Pikachu seems to be very popular. Pokemon is satanic.
For the church to deal with.
Throughout Pokemon's existence, it has been bombarded with claims of being satanic or demonic, from the early days of the Pokemon boom to the release of Pokemon Go, and so on. On YouTube alone, you can find many recordings of sermons discussing the horrors and satanic power that Pokemon will have over your children. I even found an article on a website called WorthyNews.com that talks about the dangers of Pokemon in the lives of children. There's a lot more to this, but you get the idea. Spiky Ear Pichu. Around 2009 to 2010, players can obtain a Pikachu-colored Pichu via Mystery Gift in their copy of Diamond, Pearl, and Platinum at select retail game stores. If you transfer the Pikachu-colored Pichu into Heart Gold and Soul Silver and take it to the Ilex Forest as your following Pokemon, as well as with an open slot in your party, you'll trigger an event where the spiky-eared Pichu will appear and you'll be able to obtain it. Furthermore, if you take the spiky-eared Pichu to Professor Elm, he'll examine it and inform you that this Pichu has somehow traveled through time via Celebi, and that he wishes to research it further. However, no further information is given, leaving the mystery up in the air to this day. Pokégods. The Pokégods were a collection of rumored Pokémon said to exist within Pokémon Red and Blue, and eventually Yellow as well. At one point, Pikablu was one of these Pokégods, before everyone found out it was just Meryl. However, many other Pokégods were entirely made up. Many were Gen 2 Pokémon that were either shown and not named in the anime, or seen in magazines or promotional screenshots, and many were made up evolutions to existing Pokémon. Some of the more popular Pokégods are Doomsay and its evolution Doomsday, Anthrax, Apocalypse, even Missingno was considered a Pokégod. The locations of these Pokégods varied. As mentioned previously, one of the spots where you could find the Pokégods was behind Bill's house. Other ways to find them required strange and convoluted steps, kind of like the way you trigger Missingno, but even more ridiculous. Underneath Diglett or Dugtrio. I wouldn't really call it a fan theory, necessarily, but a popular fan point of discussion is what exactly is below Diglett and Dugtrio, or more so, what is its lower body like, since it's always sticking out of the ground? Of course, there are many hilarious fan interpretations, and there's also a scene in Pokemon Mystery Dungeon where Diglett says, "My feet feel like they're still walking on air." So, it has feet somewhere. I personally believe Diglett and Dugtrio have little arms and feet, and they're just below the ground, but really, who knows? The mystery will continue to remain as such. Blue's Raticate. Yet again, another popular fan theory. When you face your rival aboard the SS Anne, his party consists of a Pidgeotto, a Raticate, a Kadabra, and whichever starter he took. This is the only battle in the entire game where your rival uses this Raticate. After this encounter, you don't see your rival again until Lavender Town, inside the Pokemon Tower. Before the fight, he asks if your Pokemon has died, but then realizes it hadn't. Many fans take his being there as proof that his Raticate died as a result of your battle with him on the SS Anne, and he was simply laying it to rest. I really don't know about this one. I mean, sure, okay, it's possible. But, like, you knocked out his Pokemon, too. Why didn't they die? Maybe he found three revives and couldn't find a fourth, or maybe Raticate was just beat so badly, which is horrible. But I don't know. Either way, this is still a popular fan theory to this day. Smosh. Not entirely sure why this is on the iceberg, but Smosh has a couple videos about Pokemon, most notably the Pokemon in Real Life videos, though I never personally ever watched Smosh. I do, of course, know their 2005 Pokemon theme song video. That video was absolutely amazing, and the true golden age of YouTube. I can't find the original video on the Smosh channel, so I think Smosh may have removed it, which is really sad. Not really sure why they did that, but the re-upload has millions of views and can still be enjoyed to this day. Pokerus. Pokerus is an incredibly rare virus that can affect any Pokemon at random, starting from Gen 2 onwards. The odds of finding a Pokemon with Pokerus in the wild are around 1 in 22,000, compared to running into a wild shiny Pokemon, which is 1 in 8,192. Pokerus, however, is actually a very useful thing for your Pokemon to catch, as it doubles the EVs gained through battles. It is possible to infect your other Pokemon with Pokerus if you have one infected with Pokerus already in your party. Any Pokemon that are adjacent to the infected one has a possibility of getting the virus itself. The virus, however, on infected Pokemon only lasts 1 to 4 days, so if you'd like to preserve the Pokerus to pass on to a certain Pokemon later on, you can put an infected Pokemon in the box, which will delay its curing process. There's a lot more technical information and people who are completely dedicated to farming for Pokerus, so if you want information on it, you can find plenty of YouTube videos about the subject. Fight Professor Oak. As I had mentioned in the point about the third starter, there was originally going to be a fight with Professor Oak, and he'd use the third starter, as well as a diverse team of Pokemon to battle against you. It's not entirely known where this fight would occur. Some think it was right after the credits, and you reload the game, and if you go talk to him, it would initiate the battle. Others think that it'd be yet another fight after you beat the champion Blue, which would be absolutely brutal. It's hard to say, but regardless, it would be cool to have another difficult fight in the game, sort of like Red at the end of Gold, Silver, and Crystal. Arbok spelled backwards is Cobra. Yes. Yes, it is, and Ekans spelled backwards is Snake. Not really sure why this is a point on the iceberg, but I do remember some Pokemon guidebooks back from when I was a kid having this as some sort of fact, but anyway, there you go. Pokemon sizes in the anime. The size of Pokemon in anime is incredibly inconsistent, to say the least. I mean, I could go on, and I'm sure you already know, but I'll go ahead and name a few examples. In the Season 1 episode Mystery of the Lighthouse, there's a Dragonite that is just massive, like easily hundreds of feet tall, where Dragonite is actually 7 foot 3 inches tall on average. There's also a giant Tentacruel, also in Season 1, in the episode Tentacruel and Tentacruel. Another massive Pokemon capable of destroying skyscrapers, the average height of a Tentacruel is 5 foot 3 inches. Not only are the sizes of Pokemon kind of strange, sometimes their weights are too, which we'll see in the next point of the iceberg. Wailord is less dense than air. Wailord, the massive whale Pokemon, is 47 feet long. On top of that, he's just a very, very large Pokemon. However, he only weighs 877 pounds, or 397 kilograms. To compare to a blue whale in real life, they grow to an average of 100 feet long and can weigh as much as 350,000 pounds, or 158,757 kilograms. With these measurements of weight and size, it's determined that Wailord is actually less dense than air and would actually float, kind of like a balloon. I mean, in the Pokedex, Wailord is called the Float Whale Pokemon, so maybe that was the idea. Question mark, question mark, question mark. These three question marks is a typing that only exists in Generation 2, 3, and 4, and has not returned since. It is neutrally effective against all types, and in turn, all types are neutrally effective against it. The only move to have this typing is Curse, which is a strange move in itself. Curse has also been featured as a normal type move and a ghost type move, while Arceus features the ability multi-type, which of course allows it to change its typing. A ?? Type Arceus sprite exists in the files of Diamond, Pearl, Platinum, HeartGold, and Soul Silver, and is colored as a normal type Arceus, and is completely unobtainable without hacking. Mimikyu's real appearance. Mimikyu's real appearance under its Pikachu costume is a mystery, and is said to be so absolutely terrifying and incomprehensible that, according to its Pokedex entry, and I quote, "A scholar who saw what was under its rag was overwhelmed by terror and died from the shock." Another Pokedex entry states, "A gust of wind revealed what hides under this Pokemon's rag to a passing trainer, who went home and died painfully that very night." Jeez, Mimikyu must be like some eldritch horror or something. Something so beyond our realm of comprehension that its mere existence is enough to break the human mind upon viewing it. Pokemon in earlier generations. I assume this is referring to Pokemon that were meant to appear in earlier generations than their debut, but were pushed back for one reason or another. Originally, Gen 1 was supposed to have 190 Pokemon. From what research I've done, it seems as though the Pokemon from Gen 2 that were supposed to appear in Gen 1 were Scizor, Shuckle, Heracross, Ho-Oh, Sneasel, Teddiursa, Ursaring, Slugma, Magcargo, Swinub, Pillowswine, Corsola, Remoraid, Octillery, Delibird, Mantine, Skarmory, Houndour, Houndoom, Kingdra, Fanfy, Donphan, Porygon2, Stantler, Smeargle, Tyrogue, Hitmontop, Smoochum, Elekid, Magby, Miltank, Blissey, Raikou, Entei, Suicune, Larvitar, Pupitar, Tyranitar, and Lugia. Maybe I should have done a Pokerap for you guys. Sorry I had to just name them all like that. The way it was determined that it was these Pokemon that were cut was surprisingly through Missing No. From what sense I can make of all this, Missing No has 39 unique values, and if traded to from Red and Blue to Gold and Silver, these values represented one of 39 of the Pokemon listed. It's definitely not 100% undeniable proof that it was meant to be these Pokemon, but it's definitely an interesting connection. Strange Souvenir. In Pokemon X and Y, you meet a traveling NPC who tells you that he's from a different region, and even outright says the region he's from is not Kanto, Johto, Hoenn, Sinnoh, or Unova, and eventually gives you a tiki-looking charm called the Strange Souvenir. This was simply included as a hint of the upcoming Alola region for Gen 7, and the Strange Souvenir item really holds no purpose other than selling it for money in-game. Gold and Silver Space World Demo. During Space World 1997, a demo of Pokemon Gold and Silver was shown off, looking pretty close to the final product, though with some notable differences, such as the title screen looking completely different, and Silver version showing Ho-Oh instead of Lugia for some reason. New Barktown being called Silent Hills, presumably changed to not be confused with the horror game series, of course. And most interestingly, many Pokemon that still have yet to see the light of day, such as Honoguma, who is absolutely adorable, and I want one, apparently taking the place of Cyndaquil, as well as its two evolved forms. Next we have Kudasu, taking the place of Totodile, as well as its two evolved forms. An evolution for Hoothoot, which looks nothing like Noctowl, named Bobo, and many, many more. Seriously, go through this list sometime, it's really quite interesting. But, you know, I just kind of realized too while recording the script, this is off script by the way, isn't Bobo the owl from Clash of the Titans? Like the owl, the mechanical owl that Harry Hamlin talks to? Is that a reference? The Clash of the Titans? That's really cool if it is. Anyway, back to the script. Wobbuffet's Tail. Another popular theory, this one suggests that Wobbuffet's tail is Wobbuffet. By that, I mean the large blue body is more of a substitute, or like how a turtle uses its shell for protection. It's meant to be what gets attacked in order to ensure Wobbuffet's safety for its true form, which, again, is the black tail behind it, with the eyes. According to Pokedex entries, specifically from Sapphire, it states, Blob Effect does nothing but endure attacks. It won't attack on its own. However, it won't endure an attack on its tail. When that happens, the Pokemon will try to take the foe with it using Destiny Bond. This protective nature of its tail certainly seems to hint that the tail is the true body of Wobbuffet. It's just yet to be outright stated officially. Shellos in Gen 3. In a 2007 Nintendo Power interview with Junichi Masuda, he stated that there is also a Sea Slug Pokemon that we weren't able to put in Ruby and Sapphire that we were able to put in this one, Pokemon Diamond and Pearl, which, given the keyword here, Sea Slug, and Shellos is described as Sea Slug Pokemon, that pretty much confirms that he was referring to Shellos. Along with Shellos, of course, that means, of course, Gastrodon was meant to be included as well. There was also back sprites of Shellos and Gastrodon found within the files of Ruby and Sapphire, so that pretty much makes this one an open and shut case. Animals in the Pokemon world. The concept of animals existing alongside Pokemon in the real world has existed for as long as the franchise, but it's really never explicitly talked about in great detail. From the games to the anime to the cards, countless times real animals are mentioned without any second thought. Even Pokemon themselves are regarded as being similar to real animals. The Pokemon refers to Pikachu as an electric mouse Pokemon, so does this mean mice exist? Are Pokemon their own unique type of being in the world? I mean, humans are technically animals, but Pokemon seem to be completely unique to any other type of living thing, especially considering that, as we established, real animals exist in the Pokemon world. To me personally, it seems as if Pokemon are the anomaly within the universe, but really, who knows? Of course, we all know Arceus is considered the creator in the Pokemon universe? So, I don't know. This whole thing can go any number of ways if you think about it too much, and it can be a video all on its own, so let's just leave it there for now. First Pokemon. I'm not 100% sure, but I think this could either be referring to the first Pokemon ever designed, or the first Pokemon to ever exist within the universe of the series. If it's referring to the first Pokemon to ever exist in the universe of Pokemon, that would be Arceus, who then created Dialga, Palkia, and Giratina to create the universe. Not exactly sure what Giratina's role would have been, given that Dialga and Palkia represent time and space, respectively, and Giratina has control over antimatter, but either way, Giratina would be sealed away in the distortion world, supposedly due to its violent nature. The first Pokemon ever created for the franchise, however, was Rhydon. Evolving Raichu. In Pokemon Red and Blue, in the Cinnabar Island Laboratory, as I previously mentioned, there's an NPC that you can trade a Raichu to for an Electrode. If you speak to this NPC again, they'll say the Raichu you traded me went and evolved. This simple line of text sparked so many rumors back in the day about the possibility of Raichu being able to evolve, again, as I mentioned previously. People tried giving it stones to evolve, leveling it up, giving it endless vitamins, and so on. And unlike most rumors, where, like, there isn't anything to go off except someone telling you, if an NPC in a game states something happened, then I can't really blame a kid for believing it to be true. I mean, generally, that's how you got around in old games anyway. An NPC would point you in the right direction or give you a vague hint. So if this trainer tells you that a Raichu evolved, I can 100% see why a kid must think that it has to be possible, or at least some hint to being possible, but of course it's not, but that wasn't always meant to be the case, as you'll see in our next point of the iceberg. Gorachu. Gorachu was revealed in a 2018 interview with illustrator Atsuko Nishida and character designer Ken Sugimori as a conceptual evolution for Raichu back during the development of Pokemon Red and Green. That was, of course, eventually scrapped before the game came to be released. He was scrapped due to balance issues, according to Sugimori, and so far only the back sprite of Gorachu has been revealed, leaving fans speculating on what his true design looks like. Butterfree Venomoth swapped evolution lines. And yet again, another very popular fan theory. To this day, Butterfree and Venomoth's evolution lines being swapped, specifically Caterpie and Venonat. It's quite obvious that Venonat and Butterfree have very similar features, so I totally understand where this theory comes from, But we also have to look at the fact that many other simple design choices carry over from Pokemon to Pokemon, like eye shapes, antenna, and so on. For example, if you look at Jinx's eyes and Magikarp's eyes, they're the exact same. Paris and Venomoth also have the exact same eye shape, color, and again, so on. Now, I get it. I know Venonat's design has four real similarities with Butterfree, and that's a lot. The antenna, the hands, the mouth, the eyes are all very similar. And you know what? It's not like it's ever been outright debunked by Game Freak or Pokemon Company anyway, so if you want to believe this, more power to you. Keep the fun mysteries alive. Tombstone. The only thing I think this is referring to is that in Blaine's gym on Cinnabar Island, you must answer quiz questions correctly to move on without battling a trainer. One of these questions asks whether or not TM28 contains the move Tombstoner in Red, Blue, and Yellow, or Tombstony in Fire Red, Leaf Green, and Let's Go. Not sure why they switched it from Tombstoner to Tombstony. Even looking it up online for speculation, it doesn't really turn up anything. Maybe they just didn't want the word stoner in their game. Who knows? Meowth's Party. Meowth's Party is a song used as the seventh ending theme song to the Pokemon anime in Japan, in episodes 117 through 141. The song was used for an interactive tech demo at Nintendo Space World 2000, where a CGI Meowth, along with other Pokemon, performed the song. Apparently this tech demo was used to demonstrate the graphical capabilities of the GameCube. It's quite ridiculous and cheesy, but since Pokemon was so big at the time, I'm sure it went over very well. The previously mentioned ending 7 of the Pokemon anime was CGI as well. Just thought I'd mention that. Lastly, in Super Smash Bros. Melee, there is a trophy of Meowth holding the red Fender Stratocaster from Meowth's party, and the description even mentions it. Burger King. In 1999, Burger King partnered with Nintendo to have Pokemon toys in their kids' meals. This was during the peak of the franchise, and was meant to coincide with the release of Pokemon the First movie. Kids went nuts, and Burger King stores were having trouble keeping stock. Boy, does that sound familiar. I mean, at least back then, people seemed to have more of a chance. Anyway, along with these toys were also a premium purchase that you can buy alongside your meal, that, of course, being the display Pokeball with 23-karat gold-plated... Well, they call it a card, but it's really more of just like a plate or a plaque. These are really cool, but not really worth much of anything, even with the gold. It's just plated and very little actual gold is used, if any. I'd actually be curious to see how much gold you'd have if you melted it down. And you know what? I'd gladly donate one if someone wants to try to melt it down and see how much gold they get out of it. But anyway. There were 56 toys in total, each representing a unique Pokemon, and all coming with a plastic Pokeball keychain to house the Pokemon in. Little did everyone know, these Pokeballs would prove to be a choking hazard, resulting in the tragic death of a 13-month infant, as well as another incident with an 18-month-old infant that luckily was prevented by the father who was present, but had he not been, could have ended tragically. This led to a recall of the Pokeballs, though, of course, due to Pokemon's popularity, many of these still exist today and are easy to find on sites like eBay. Pokemon War. In Pokemon Red, Blue, and Yellow, Lieutenant Surge mentions that electric Pokemon saved him during the war, but of course, no further details given. Many fan theories have been created trying to figure out what exactly this war was. Many of the theories state that this is the reason behind Red not having a father, and your rival seemingly having no parents at all. This all goes a lot deeper, of course, as usual, in regards to the cause of the conflict, or were Pokemon directly being used as weapons and whatnot, but nothing's ever been officially stated on the matter, so for now, it's all up to our imagination. Tortuga seen in 1997. In a 1997 issue of Japanese magazine Micro Group, there appears to be a turtle-like Pokemon on the cover that never appeared in Pokemon Gold and Silver, the game that the magazine was covering at the time. Many believe this Pokemon design went on to become Tortuga, which may very well be the case. However, I personally think there are many, many Pokemon designs that have yet to see the light of day. For example, look at the Pokemon on the very same cover. What is that thing? Of the three Pokemon they show, only Tyranitar exists as an actual Pokemon. One didn't come out until years later, and the other doesn't even exist at all. I'm willing to bet that there are hundreds of other Pokemon designs in the archives that were made back in the day during the development of Red and Blue that have yet to see the light of day. Yoshi. In the April 1999 issue of Expert Gamer magazine, an article was published detailing the method of how to get Yoshi in Pokemon Red and Blue. To get Yoshi, a player would have to trade a Dratini from either Red or Blue to the opposite game. On the game that received Dratini, the player then must level up Dratini until it evolves into Dragonite, then trade it back to the original game that the Dratini was sent from. The player then is supposed to take the Dragonite with a Firestone to the unknown dungeon, reach the location where he found Mewtwo, and use the Firestone on Dragonite in this location. If done correctly, your Dragonite will evolve into Yoshi. Obviously, this has April Fool's joke written all over it, but let's be real. It was 1999. I'm sure many kids tried this. I personally had never heard of Expert Gamer magazine before researching this point of the iceberg, so I had never heard of this whole Yoshi thing before, but again, I'm sure someone out there had to have attempted this. Munna in Gen 1. Munna itself doesn't make an appearance in Gen 1, but what this point is referring to is that in Red, Blue, Yellow, Fire Red, and Leaf Green, a trainer on Route 10 says that she wants a pink Pokemon with a floral pattern, which eventually was created in the form of Munna in Gen 5. Inside a Pokeball. Another popular mystery among Pokemon fans is, what exactly is inside a Pokeball? Ever since day one, we've known that Pokemon generally live inside Pokeballs, but rarely are we ever given a glimpse of what's actually inside. Do they like it in there? Is it comfortable? It's clear from a simple perspective of the show that when a Pokemon enters a ball, or is brought out from the ball, it's generally done in a flash of energy. When retrieving a Pokemon, a beam from the Pokeball hits the Pokemon, then the Pokemon turns transparent red and is warped into the ball. When releasing a Pokemon, it's generally a white burst of energy that the Pokemon materializes from. Pokemon are often seen in the series as being able to hear things outside their Pokeball, and in many cases are even able to leave their Pokeballs on their own will. Besides all that, we still have no idea what the actual inside of a Pokeball is like. In the manga, the Pokemon are shown literally just sitting in their Pokeball doing absolutely nothing, and I really hope that's not a literal representation of their life in the Pokeball. It's theorized that the inside of the Pokeball is actually the ideal environment for whatever Pokemon is inside, and contains everything the Pokemon of any given type would need to feel as comfortable as possible. This has never been stated by anyone working on the series, but it's a popular theory, and one that would make plenty of sense given the world of Pokemon. Inside the PC. Similar to what's inside a Pokeball, what's inside the PC? The PC is clearly a network that's capable of storing not just items, but a large amount of Pokemon as well. Similar to how Pokemon are seemingly converted into energy to be stored into Pokeballs, a popular theory is that the Pokeballs are then digitized to be stored within a data network, hence why you can access your Pokemon from any PC that allows you to do so. When accessing a PC to retrieve a Pokemon, it simply accesses the network, presumably from a trainer's IP, and allows you to retrieve the Pokemon, sort of like a cloud data network. Uri Geller, Kadabra lawsuit. Uri Geller is a fake psychic and a hack fraud who made a career out of convincing people of his delusional psychic abilities that have routinely been debunked and never replicated in a controlled environment. That being said, he's very defensive over any or anything that could potentially harm his fragile image, thus leading us to his infamous lawsuit in 2000 against Nintendo over the Pokemon Kadabra. Since Kadabra bends spoons with his mind, as does Alakazam, and this is a trick that Uri Geller was famous for performing. It's also worth mentioning that in Japanese, Kadabra's name is Yungara, which, you know, with the Geller part sounding like Geller, and, I mean, yeah, Kadabra's Japanese name is paying homage to Uri Geller, as Abra's Japanese name is Casey, paying homage to magician Edgar Casey. I mean, for Uri Geller to go after a kid's cartoon for paying an homage that, by all accounts, is in good light. I mean, Kadabra is one of the most powerful Pokemon in Gen 1, even without evolving to Alakazam. It's completely bizarre, but as I said, he's very protective of his image. Despite my blasting of Uri Geller, in 2020, he did make a tweet apologizing for what he did to Kadabra, specifically mentioning that it was a mistake, and even posting a video showing his collection of Kadabra merchandise that he collected for the case back in 2000. Mostly a bunch of cards, the VHS tape with the episode featuring Kadabra, a bunch of figures, and so on. But anyway, that's enough of the whole Uri Geller thing, lest he come after me next for saying such hurtful things to him. Original forms of legendary beasts. The legendary beasts Entei, Suicune, and Raikou can be found in Pokemon Gold, Silver, and Crystal version, hiding within the burned-down tower of Ecruteak City. Upon stumbling across them, they'll scatter across the land to be hunted and caught. In lore, the fire claimed the lives of three Pokemon. Ho-Oh would then revive these Pokemon, turning them into greater beings than they were when they were in their past life. It is rumored that the three Pokemon that perished in the fire were Vaporeon, Jolteon, and Flareon. But really, there are only two real connections that make sense, that being the city's devotion to the Eevee evolution line with the Kimono sisters, and the fact that Vaporeon, Jolteon, and Flareon share typing with Suicune, Raikou, and Entei, respectively. Now, how these three Pokemon could perish in a fire despite having a perpetual water cannon available in the form of Vaporeon is beyond me. Maybe it was just bad luck or Vaporeon was having an off day, but either way, it was three Pokemon that perished, and these three all share a connection through evolution and are all dog-like, so sure, why not? It's a better answer than Nintendo simply never addressing it. Arbok Regional Pattern. Arbok is a Pokemon that has always had its design ever so slightly changed between generations, and it's very easy to see why. Arbok, based, of course, on the famous Cobra Snake, has a hood that's used for a similar purpose as its real-life counterpart, but also has a face pattern inside it, seemingly to increase intimidation in foes. This pattern has changed in each generation, though it still generally shares the same scary face design. Colors and the shape of the eyes and mouth vary. Also, Arbok in Gen 1 has a couple W patterns on the back of the hood, which isn't present in other generations, though this could just be due to the fact that many Gen 1 Pokemon designs had strange quirks that were fixed and standardized in later generations. Shedinja's Back. A very short and interesting Pokemon fact, and yet another creepy one at that, the Pokedex entry for Shedinja in Omega Ruby reads, "It's believed that this Pokemon will steal the spirit of anyone peering into its hollow body from its back." The way it's worded, primarily starting with "it's believed," leads me to believe that this is simply a myth within the Pokemon universe and not based in fact or as an ability that Shedinja is actually capable of, especially considering that, you know, when you're battling with a Pokemon, generally its back is facing you, so it's just going to steal the spirit of any trainer using it. Who knows. Still pretty creepy, though. Real-world locations. I'm not entirely sure if this is referring to the fact that the regions in each Pokemon generation represent a real-world location, or if it's referring to the fact that many real-world locations are name-dropped within the series, so we'll cover both. Starting with the regions, Kanto is based off of, well, the Kanto region of Japan. Johto is based off of the Kansai region of Japan. Hoenn is based off the Japanese main island of Kyushu. Sinnoh is based off the Japanese island of Hokkaido, as well as the southern part of the Russian islands of Sakhalin and Kunashir. Pardon if I pronounce that wrong. I have a habit of doing that, of course. Unova is based off of New York. Kalos is based off of northern France. Alola is based off the Hawaiian Islands. And lastly, Galar, which is based off the United Kingdom. Now for all the real-world name drops in the series, and there are a lot of them, so here we go. Oh, and I'm only going to mention the ones that specifically mention them as a place. So in the instance, for example, where there's a Spearow named Kenya, that doesn't count. It has to be a direct reference to the location as a location. Lieutenant Surge is commonly referred to as the Lightning American, and in Fire Red and Leaf Green, a journal entry states that he was a pilot while home in America. Once again in Fire Red and Leaf Green, scientist Taylor in the Silph-Co building mentions an international branch of Silph-Co being in Russia. As mentioned earlier on the iceberg, Mew was said to have been discovered in Guyana, South America. In anime, James mentions that the Fuchsia City Gym looks like a Japanese restaurant. In another episode of the anime titled March of the Executor Squad, in English dub, the character Melvin says that he wants to make it to Las Vegas, though in the Japanese version, he says Broadway. In many Pokedex entries for Arcanine, it is often referred to as being part of Chinese legends. China is mentioned quite a few more times, so I'm not going to drop every example for that one. In Ponyta's Pokedex entries, it is said that it could clear the Eiffel Tower, or Tokyo Tower, depending on region, in one leap, as well as Ayers Rock, located in Australia. Misty mentioned Merry Old England in the episode Wherefore Art Thou Pokemon. In the movie Mewtwo Strikes Back, Team Rocket disguises themselves as Vikings and offers Ash and the group a ride. Brock comments that he didn't know Vikings still existed. Ash replies that they mostly live in Minnesota, which is a reference to the football team, the Minnesota Vikings, and made my dad, and I'm sure many others, crack up in the theaters, probably the only thing entertaining for him in that entire film's runtime. In the Swedish and Danish dub of the movie, he says the Vikings are from Norway and Sweden, respectively. In the Finnish dub, Ash says they live in Sipplu Archipelago, which I'm 100% certain I pronounced that wrong, so sorry, once again another error on my part. In many Pokedex entries for Poliwrath, it mentions the Pokemon swimming the Pacific Ocean, though for some reason in Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, they changed it simply to the ocean. Zatu's Pokedex entry in Soul Silver and Fire Red mentions South America. In the Wizards of the Coast Black Star promo set of the Pokemon trading card game, the card Lucky Stadium shows Pichu and Pikachu flying on Charizard's back above New York City, with buildings like the Empire State Building being very prominent. In the Japanese versions of Fire Red and Leaf Green, Blaine explicitly mentions Kyoto, Japan. The Pokedex entry in Ruby, Sapphire, and Emerald for Delibird states that a Delibird has helped a famous explorer reach the top of Mount Everest. Regice's Pokedex entry in Emerald mentions the Antarctic, and the Antarctic is mentioned by Jesse in the anime episode The Scheme Team. There are a few more mentions, but most are mentions of places I've already said, so really there's no point in repeating them. And some are landmarks which, if they're man-made, could theoretically exist anywhere, so I mainly included natural landmarks in most cases, save for a couple. KND. So I'm not 100% certain what this is referring to. The first thing that comes to mind when I think KND is the Cartoon Network series Kids Next Door, but I'm not positive if that's what this is referring to, but Google isn't really helping me when I search KND Pokemon, because all I'm getting is Kids Next Door stuff. So it seems to be referring to the fact that a character in Kids Next Door is shown wearing Ash's outfit in one episode, complete with the green backpack. Besides that, I've really got nothing, so it's probably just showing that Ash is a member of Kids Next Door. I mean, that makes sense, right? He's 10, so yeah. N is a Zoroark. N, from Pokemon Black and White, is one of the leaders of Team Plasma. A popular fan theory is that N himself is a Zoroark. There are quite a few ideas behind this theory, such as Zoroark's knack of fooling humans with illusions and tricks, and that N himself may simply be a result of one of these illusions. There are several instances that fans point to as proof of this being the case, such as when you encounter Zoroark in N's castle, and it runs off. Upon following it, you encounter N, with Zoroark being nowhere to be found. N, of course, has a Zoroark in his party, though, so I don't know. It could just, you know, be his own Zoroark keeping watch. This is often dismissed as simply being an illusion of Zoroark, but, like, what? There are two major issues with this. One is that Zoroark would either be able to keep and maintain an illusion of a human while battling as a Zoroark, and after it's defeated, or two, Zoroark is able to make an illusion of itself to physically battle with your Pokemon as it stands there pretending to be N. It's sort of a stretch, at least in my opinion. Another common point many attribute to the theory is that N has long hair like Zoroark, and again, kind of a stretch there, but I see where they're getting at. Palindromic names. A palindrome is a word that's spelled the same both forwards and backwards, and there are a few Pokemon names where this is the case. Those Pokemon being Eevee, Alomomola, Ho-Oh, and Girafarig. Not much more to this one besides that. Fishing in gym statues. For some reason, in Pokemon Red, Blue, and Yellow, you can use a fishing rod and catch Pokemon on the sides of the two statues inside the entrance of every gym. For whatever reason, only the Old Rod and Good Rod are capable of catching anything, with the Super Rod always displaying the message, "Looks like there's nothing here." Manji. The Manji symbol, more commonly referred to in modern day as a swastika, is an ancient symbol dating back thousands of years in cultures, as well as holding many different meanings. For example, in East Asia, it is a symbol of luck and good fortune. In Armenia, the symbol's meaning is eternity and eternal light, symbolizing God. Among the Navajo in North America, the symbol is used for good luck. Of course, in 1920, with the birth of the Nazi Party, they would pervert the symbol and have it almost entirely associated with hate in the modern world. Why I'm explaining all this is that in 1998, the Japanese version of the card Koga's Ninja Trick was released and featured a Manji symbol. Unfortunately, many interpreted the symbol as being associated with Nazism without being aware of its uses throughout the centuries as anything but a symbol of hate. So, when the card was released in the 2000 English set of Gym Heroes, the symbol was removed. Old Shinies. Generation 2 was the first time shiny Pokemon were obtainable in the series, but at the time, the color choices for these shinies were, in many cases, different from what they are today. I'm not entirely sure why this is, as I tried doing research, but came up with very little. I could have sworn I read a long time ago that in Gen 2, shinies were simply an opposite palette of the Pokemon's main color on the color spectrum, but this was changed later to give some Pokemon more interesting shiny variations. But as I researched this video, I can't find out if that fact is true or not, so I don't know where I saw that fact. For example, in Gen 2, Pokemon like Psyduck and Spinarak's shiny forms were much darker and more purple in color, where nowadays they're a much lighter blue. These were probably just changed in order to give the Pokemon a much more interesting look as graphics got better across the generations, or in Charizard's case, to make him even more cool, because everyone loves Charizard for some reason. Pikachurin. In 2008, an extracellular matrix-like retinal protein was discovered in Japan by Shigeru Sato, who decided to name the protein Pikachurin, as the protein itself is nimble, as is Pikachu. Not really much more I can say about this one, as biology has never really been one of my strong points, but there you go. Censored episodes in opening. I'm not exactly sure what this is referring to. I don't know every single scene from every Pokemon season, but most censored or banned episodes came from Gen 1, so going through every scene in the opening for Gen 1, I really can't find much. There's the scene of Ash riding on Lapras that is reminiscent to the Holiday Hijinks episode that was banned, but that scene itself is never shown in the episode. It just looks similar. There's the scene of Tentacruel smashing a building from the episode Tentacruel and Tentacruel, but even that was only banned for a short time after September 11th. Other than that, it's scenes from different episodes that have all aired multiple times and scenes made specifically for the opening. If someone wants to correct me, please do so, because I'm very curious about this point, but have come up empty-handed. Genesect is Kabutops. Once again, we come to yet another fan theory. This one stating that Gen 5 Pokemon Genesect was made from the Kabutops. One of the key components outside their similar stature is that both of their Pokedex entries state that they existed 300 million years ago. The only issue here is, as its name implies, Genesect is a bug type as well as steel. The steel type no doubt coming from its enhancements artificially given to it by Team Plasma, but if it was created from a Kabutops, it would be rock water, or at the very least, steel water. We can assume the enhancements would replace Kabutops' rock typing. Either way, I think it's really just a big coincidence that they happen to have similar body types, and there's really nothing more to it than that. Now, if that bug typing didn't exist and it was instead water, I'd certainly be way more on board with this theory, but as it stands now, there just isn't enough proof. Unobtainable Arceus. I'm not 100% sure what this is referring to. As I mentioned previously during the ... point on the iceberg, there exists an Arceus in the game files that represents this typing, but it is unobtainable, so it's possible it could be referring to that, but really, that was all I was able to find in my research. I couldn't find anything else on any Arceuses being completely unobtainable in the games. Diamond and Pearls lack of fire types. From what I can tell, the only fire-type Pokemon obtainable in Diamond and Pearl are Chimchar and Ponyta until post-game. That's it. You can't even get an Eevee for Flareon until after the Elite Four. That is completely ridiculous. Looker is the doctor. In Pokemon Platinum, you meet a character who won't tell you his name and to only refer to him as Looker. Simply put, many fans think this character is a nod to Doctor Who's 10th Doctor, David Tennant. And, yeah, I mean, maybe, at least as an homage. Doctor Who is incredibly popular, and has been for decades, so it wouldn't surprise me if the design and vagueness of the character was intentional. Then again, his design really is just like a basic detective, and he seems to be acting as such, so it could really go either way. Porygon did nothing wrong. This is referring to the infamous episode of Season 1, Electric Soldier Porygon, that caused seizures in a large amount of viewers due to a scene in which the colors red and blue flashed on the screen rapidly. In a very odd bit of reference, this event was officially recognized by the Guinness World Records as being awarded a place among their rankings for, and I quote, most photosensitive epileptic seizures caused by a television show. Yeah. This episode being banned actually resulted in another thing being banned. Porygon. He never once again appeared in any episode of the anime to date, but the problem here is that Porygon didn't do anything. It was Pikachu who zapped the missiles, causing the rapid flashing. Porygon is innocent. He demands fair trial. Pikachu's the true mastermind here and was out to slander Porygon's good name. Pikachu must be tried for these crimes and banned from every episode of Pokemon. We need to burn Pikachu shirts and any other merchandise featuring that deceptive rodent. Justice for Porygon. Like, comment, and subscribe. Azoth. I'm really not sure, once again, what this is on the iceberg for, so it leads me to believe that I'm missing something, because the only Azoth I know of is Project Azoth, which is, of course, the plan of Team Magma or Team Aqua, depending on which game you're playing, to return the Earth back to its origin. The term Azoth was originally a term used in alchemy, but would later become a word relating to mercury, which was originally thought to be the base of all metals. This is, of course, however, now seen as false. Other than the initial explanation about Team Aqua and Magma, I have no idea why else this would be on the iceberg. Pulse Man. Pulse Man is a video game created by Game Freak, and many of the staff who developed the game would go on to work on Pokemon. The game was released for the Sega Mega Drive in Japan in 1994, and would later come to Sega Channel in 1995 in North America, making its release limited and temporary, which is a shame because this game is really fun and has really great 16-bit music, especially if you love the Genesis Mega Drive soundtrack. I personally see it as a mix of Mega Man and Sonic. Due to the previously mentioned team working on both Pulse Man and Pokemon, this has led to quite a few nods to Pulse Man appearing in Pokemon throughout the years. Fat Pikachu. Back during the early days of Pokemon, Pikachu's design was much more chunky. Over the years, however, it's gotten much more slim and a bit more stretched. I'm not exactly sure why they changed its design so dramatically. Maybe it was to make its movement and animation more dynamic and emphasize its speed, but either way, you can still find plenty of vintage Fat Pikachu merchandise from the early days of Pokemon when he was much more appealing. Starter caught in grass outside Pallet Town. Once again, I'm sorry to say, but I'm not 100% sure what this is referring to. I mean, from the name of the point, it would seem obvious, but of course, we never see Professor Oak catch Charmander, Squirtle, or Bulbasaur. Though, of course, we do see him catch Pikachu in Yellow version, which he would later give the player as your starter Pokemon, but back to Red and Blue. I'm not really sure if this point is referring to a theory or not. There's also, of course, the rumored Pokemon available in the grassy, inaccessible areas that you can see on both to the east and west of Pallet Town. These areas were, similar to behind Bill's house, often a rumored location where you could find the Pokegods or starter Pokemon or other elusive limited Pokemon like Eevee. These areas are actually not programmed with any Pokemon at all, so you can't even find a Pidgey here if you manage to reach it, and in most cases, accessing these areas will actually just crash your game. Bad Egg. Bad Egg is an interesting error occurring in Generation 3 and 4, as well as in Pokemon Home. that is the result of a Pokemon's data becoming corrupt. Basically, if the Pokemon represents a series of numbers in the game's code, and any of those numbers don't check out with the game, the Pokemon will show as a bad egg. Apparently, on very rare occasions, the bad egg can hatch, resulting in that for the name, or referred to as fans as DP Box, or Invisible Shiny Bulbasaur. The egg can be traded, but cannot be released, resulting in the only way to dispose of the egg being a cheat device. Glitch City. From my research, Glitch City is a glitch that occurs only in red, blue, yellow, gold, silver, and crystal. In red, blue, and yellow, there are many ways to access Glitch City, so I'll describe one method in detail. Starting at the Safari Zone, the player must first pay and enter the Safari Zone, then immediately try to leave. The attendant will ask if you wish to end your safari. Answer, no. Your character will then be standing in the entryway. Save your game, then turn off the Game Boy and turn it back on. Upon restarting your game, try to cross the attendant again. They'll ask you if you'd like to join the Safari Zone. Select no. The game will still be keeping track of your steps from before you were started, as if you never left the Safari Zone. Leave the Safari Zone and walk around until your 500 steps are up. You'll receive a message that the time is up and will be teleported back to the Safari Zone gate. Exit the Safari Zone entrance to the south, and you'll find yourself in Glitch City. If you ran out of steps in Celadon, Cerulean, Lavender Town, Fuchsia City, Viridian, Cinnabar Island, Vermilion City, or inside any building, it won't work, so make sure you're in any area besides the ones listed, and you'll find yourself in a complete mess of a city. You can leave Glitch City by teleporting or flying. In Gen 2, it's a bit more difficult, as you must encounter a glitched Pokemon represented by 5 question marks. After the battle, you can randomly end up in Glitch City. Creepy Pokedex Entries. Many Pokemon Pokedex entries are incredibly creepy, especially given the target audience for the franchise. From Pokemon that abduct children to other Eldritch-esque horrors, let's go through some of those creepy entries. Let's start with Frostlass, whose entry reads, "The soul of a woman lost on a snowy mountain possessed an icicle, becoming this Pokemon. The food it most relishes is the souls of men." Next, we've got Yamask, whose entry reads, "Each of them carries a mask that used to be its face when it was human. Sometimes they look at it and cry." As with Frostlass, the idea of humans becoming Pokemon seems to be a rather common theme in the Pokemon world, and something that I feel makes Pokemon much more mysterious and separate from simply being like animals, as I mentioned in the animals in the Pokemon world point. Next, we got the classic ghost Pokemon Gengar, whose entry reads, "It apparently wishes for a traveling companion. Since it was once human itself, it tries to create one by taking the lives of other humans." Rather horrific, and again, we see that same theme with a Pokemon previously being human. Kadabra is also a bizarre one that follows the whole human connection thing. It reads, "A theory exists that this Pokemon was once a young boy who couldn't control his psychic powers and ended up transforming into this Pokemon." Now, yes, it does state theory, but again, how strange. Instead of dying and becoming a Pokemon, the child just became a Kadabra one day? Next, we got Drowsy and Hypno, and I've personally always despised these things. Drowsy is ugly as sin, and I mean, I can say the same for Hypno, but so much more too. Hypno is just a freak to me. I don't know, something about it just freaks me out. Anyway, Drowsy's entry reads, "If your nose becomes itchy while you are sleeping, it's a sure sign one of these Pokemon is standing above your pillow and trying to eat your dream through your nostrils." Hypnose reads, "It carries a pendulum-like device. There once was an incident in which it took away a child it hypnotized." Come on, that is just creepy. Next, we got the fan favorite Drifloon, whose entry reads, "Stories go that it grabs the hand of small children and drags them away to the afterlife. It dislikes heavy children." Wow, stealing children and a body-shaming savage? Drifloon really has no chill. Let's do one more, because really, I can go on for hours. There are so many creepy Pokedex entries. Banette is a pretty messed up one. Its entry reads, It's a stuffed toy that was thrown away and became possessed, ever searching for the one who threw it away so it can exact its revenge. Wow. Bennett literally wants to murder the child that deemed it worthy of the trash. Mirage Island. Mirage Island is a location in Ruby, Sapphire, and Emerald that is very hard to reach and is accessible only under a set of very specific circumstances. The chances of encountering Mirage Island are even lower than encountering a shiny Pokemon. The way to trigger the island to appear is as follows. Every day, the game generates a random number between 0 and 65,535. If the number matches the first two bytes of the personality value of any Pokemon in the player's party, Mirage Island will appear. If a Pokemon in your party has these matching numbers, and you remove them from your party, the island will no longer be there, until you put that party member back in your team. You can also try your luck by constantly switching teams of Pokemon, hoping Mirage Island will spawn, but again, it's incredibly low. With a full party, the odds of having a Pokemon with the correct numbers is 1 in 10,923. Now, for what's on the island, a bunch of why nots ranging from level 5 to 50, and most importantly, a tree that grows the lychee berry, this being the only location in the entire game to do so. Primate learning Iron Tail. Primate can learn Iron Tail. Primate has no tail. Yeah, not much really more to this, besides it just being one of those weird things that makes no sense. It's also referenced directly by a primate in Poképark, exclaiming that he learned Iron Tail without a tail. Really, that's all there is to this one, though, so moving on. Sega Pico Games. The Sega Pico was a video game console primarily focused on education games that was released in Japan in 1983, North America and Europe in 1994, and in South Korea in 1995. Despite only lasting until 1998 in most markets, somehow it managed to last until 2005 in Japan and sold 3.4 million units compared to North America's 400,000. The Pico was essentially a Sega Genesis, as it was using the same hardware, and using a stylus pen that acted as a mouse cursor to click around on the screen. The Sega Pico games came on very unique cartridges with storybook-esque pictures attached, and as you turn the pages, the activity on the screen would change with it. That's enough about the Pico. Let's get on to Pokemon. So, in 2002, Nintendo and Game Freak made the rare decision to release a first-party franchise on a system made by a company that wasn't Nintendo, and of all companies, Sega. And given the history of these two, it's pretty wild to see something like Pokemon on Sega hardware. On top of all that, in 2004, a Pikachu Special Edition Sega Pico was released. That's right, an official Nintendo-branded Sega console. Crazy. It looks a lot like the special Pikachu 3DS, doesn't it? Anyway, the three Pokemon games released for the Pico are Pokemon Catch the Numbers, released in July of 2002, Pokemon Advanced Generation, I've Begun Hiragana and Katakana, released in November of 2003, and Pokemon Advanced Generation, Pico for Everyone, Pokemon Loud Battle, in July of 2004. They're basically what you'd expect, being very similar to PC-style education games like Leader Rabbit. The Pico would eventually get an upgrade in the form of the Vino, which is basically a Pico 2, and would continue to feature Pokemon games. Pokemon Advanced Generation Pokemon Number Battle was released in October of 2005. Intellectual Training Drill Pokemon Diamond and Pearl Letter and Number Intelligence Game was released in April 2007, yes, it's actually called that, and Pokemon Diamond and Pearl Search for Pokemon Adventure in the Maze was released in September of 2009, and lastly, Pokemon Best Wishes Intelligence Training Pokemon Big Sports Meet was released in December of 2010. Yes, those are all real titles, they were actually called that. Crazy. Junji Ito Commissions. An absolute legend in both the manga and horror world, Junji Ito is famous for some of the most visceral and engaging horror stories and imagery ever made. Some of his works include Uzumaki, That Enigma at Amigata Fault, Hanging Balloons, and so much more. He's truly a legend, and if you love horror, you owe it to yourself to check out his incredibly unique and gripping style. Anyway, at one point, Mr. Ito himself made some awesome art pieces depicting Pokemon in his signature style, which is really awesome. I love when famous mangaka do other characters in their own style. Not much else to say about it, but definitely do check him out if you've never heard of him, because it is definitely life-changing. Pikachu's level reset. This is a commentary regarding Pikachu in the anime. By the time the Kanto League ends, we can assume Pikachu is probably at the very least in the mid-60s or so in terms of level. But every time Ash and Pikachu travel to a new region, Pikachu manages to get his tail handed to him by the weakest of opponents that should theoretically be low levels. Really though, I believe what's really going on here is that levels don't exist in the anime. Growth isn't the same as it is in games, as the games are RPGs and need to signify a Pokemon's progression in some way, since again, it's a video game. But in the anime, the Pokemon can simply learn and grow naturally. The concept of evolution doesn't occur, say because Ash's Charmander just hit level 16, it's because it's reached a point in its life and amount of experience in order to make that evolution occur. And again, I don't mean experience as in points, I mean legitimate experience in everything it does, from fighting to just living. That being said, just because a Snivy should be level 5 in the games because it was just obtained in the anime, that's not necessarily the case, nor should it be a measurement to a Pokemon's ability, and same goes for Pikachu. It's like in the games if you have a level 100 Charizard and a level 36 Blastoise. That Blastoise using Hydro Pump isn't going to impact a Charizard in any meaningful way, despite using such a powerful move that also has type advantage, whereas in the anime, this would be ignored. Honestly, this is just my own theory. I think I recall at some point someone in the anime actually mentioning levels, but I don't really remember where. But either way, I could be entirely wrong. That's just my idea as to why Pikachu could get beat by a Snivy, but also defeat a Metagross at the same time. Nobunaga's Ambition. Nobunaga's Ambition is a turn-based strategy RPG game series, which had its first game released in 1983. The series has gone on to appear on many consoles since its conception, into the modern era of gaming, and seems to be quite complex, with your goal in the game to unify Japan during the 16th and 17th century, through managing clans, resources, armies, and so much more, really. This game looks like a lot of fun, but also appears to have a massive learning curve. Anyway, what does this have to do with Pokemon? Well, in 2012, the game Pokemon Conquest was released, titled Pokemon plus Nobunaga's Ambition in Japan, and appears to be a crossover in which you play as a trainer, alongside his Pokemon Eevee, traveling through the Ransei region, battling warriors and warlords, while also befriending other Pokemon in order to conquer and unite the region. Again, this game seems rather complex, but also very cool at the same time. Unfortunately, games with large learning curves require a lot of time to invest into, time I don't often have, but if I ever do, this'll certainly be on the list, as it sounds really fun. Every Spinda is personalized. This is almost true. Spinda is a very unique Pokemon that is made up of unique patterns all over its body. It is said that no two Spinda are ever the same, but of course, within a video game, that can't be entirely true, as infinite possibilities simply don't exist. That leaves us with 4.3 billion unique possible designs for Spinda. So, yes, it is true to have two of the same Spinda, it's just incredibly rare to a point where it really must likely never happen, even across multiple lifetimes, I'm sure. Let's drive that number up even further, though. If we incorporate shinies into the mix, that gives us a grand total of 8.6 billion possible Spindas. Gotta catch them all. Fire Red, Leaf Green, Mystery Gift Song. Simply put, the song from Fire Red and Leaf Green that plays during Mystery Gift is also used in Diamond, Pearl, and Platinum while using the Nintendo Wi-Fi connection. Really, not much else to say about this one, but it's a pretty cool little connection between the games. 9/11 encounter rate. A very interesting fact here, on 3 days out of the year that are anniversaries of major national tragedies, the Pokemon spawn rate is decreased by 10%. These days are August 6th, August 9th, and September 11th. August 6th being the day of the atomic bombing of Hiroshima, August 9th being the day of the atomic bombing of Nagasaki, and September 11th being the day of the Twin Towers and Pentagon terrorist attacks. Old Chateau Ghosts. In Diamond, Pearl, and Platinum, there's a house within the Eterna Forest called Old Chateau that appears to be abandoned. Many of the residents of nearby Eterna City believe the mansion to be haunted, including the gym leader, Gardenia. Within this house, the player can sometimes come across the ghost of a young girl and a butler, but they cannot be interacted with. Their movement also makes them appear as if they're floating as they move about the room. There doesn't appear to be any information as to who the little girl and the butler are, but it's still creepy regardless. Toxtra City Poster. In Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, there appears to be a poster of a Gigantamax Toxtricity located in Game Freak's office in Hiya City, which is cool, of course, because the Gigantamax mechanic wasn't something Nintendo had announced yet, with Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon being released in November of 2017, and the Gigantamax not appearing until 2019 when Sword and Shield was announced, so that's a pretty cool little easter egg. Lou Vega's WB Snow Jam. Lou Vega is a musician famous for his 1999 song Mambo No. 5 that was all over the radio during the time. This made him a huge star and landed him a one-off hosting segment of the Kids WB block with Lou Vega's WB Snow Jam, where he'd introduce each show coming on and talk and sing between the shows, including a couple entertaining songs about Pikachu, Misty, and Team Rocket. Besides that, there isn't really much else to say. Unfortunate, I know, but go check out the songs. Small Girl in Phoebe's Room. Phoebe is the second Elite Four member in the Hoenn region and is a Ghost-type trainer. Upon speaking to her in Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, some strange things happen. At first, there appears to be someone sitting in a chair behind her, but they only appear for a split second before the screen fades to black. Then, when you continue to talk, there again appears to be a person standing just beyond your character's model, barely visible, but certainly there. After beating the Elite Four, if you go to Mount Pyre, you can come upon Phoebe, who will tell you that her grandmother was impressed by the battle you and Phoebe had, which had led many to believe that the ghost was in fact Phoebe's grandma, and yeah, that seems to be the implication. I don't think there's any other reason Nintendo would go out of their way to sneak a full modeled character into the background like that than have Phoebe mention this and have it not be the case, so makes sense to me. Berserk Gene. The Berserk Gene is a held item exclusive to Generation 2. When given to a Pokemon, upon entering a battle, it is consumed and the Pokemon is immediately confused and its attack stat is raised by 2. A strange little fact, in Gold, Silver, and Crystal, the game is programmed so that any wild Mewtwo, no matter what, except, I guess, through cheating, will always hold a Berserk Gene. Though, of course, you can't find a wild Mewtwo in Gold, Silver, or Crystal. But the origin of the item does imply that it comes from Mewtwo, and is even found right next to the entrance to the Unknown Dungeon. In Detective Pikachu, the Berserk Gene is referenced as if it's a drug that makes your Pokemon it's given to more powerful, but also out of control. So, it's like giving your Pokemon PCP bath salts or something, I don't know. Pokemon Reburst. Pokemon Reburst is a manga that debuted in 2011 in Japan only, following main protagonist Ryuga and his friends as they fight an organization called Great Gavel. The unique thing about this series is that the characters have the ability to become Pokemon-human hybrids using a technique called Burst. If you're interested, I'm sure fan translations are just a Google search away. I assume it's on the iceberg due to the very nature of the whole hybrid concept. The means of transforming into this hybrid come in the form of an item referred to as a Burst Heart that is a small, pocket-sized jewel that holds a Pokemon within it. The Pokemon is trapped within the jewel and can only be freed if the jewel is broken. In the series, it's not known how Burst Hearts are made, so I assume within the series itself they are found and used by the main cast, though the origin of them is a mystery to even them. Mega Flygon. Despite seeming like a prime candidate for a Mega Evolution, Flygon has yet to receive one. Nintendo Dream Magazine featured an article with Ken Sugimori in which he stated that Flygon was indeed meant to have a Mega Evolution in Pokemon X and Y, but the idea was dropped to experiencing artist's block, and I guess to this day the idea has just never been revisited. Tentaquil. Tentaquil is a fake Pokemon created on 4chan's Pokemon board, VP. Simply put, an artist drew and posted this to a thread, and upon someone asking what it is, the creator simply replied, "It's a Tentaquil." So, Tentaquil has become something of a meme on VP. Also, its signature move is vomiting blood. Conker's Bad Fur Day. Conker's Bad Fur Day, the iconic Nintendo 64 game released in March of 2001, features many jokes and references to pop culture. One deleted scene featured the tail of a Pikachu, and at one point was apparently supposed to feature Pikachu in its entirety, but was removed at the request of Nintendo. The Pikachu tail itself can still be put into the game via a cheating device. The scene featuring Pikachu is the one where Conker is talking with mob boss Don Weezo when a Pikachu wanders into the room, but only its tail is visible. Don Weezo excuses himself for a moment, and the sound of cartoonish punches are made. Don then says, "Got away again. Sorry about that. You know how it is. Gotta catch them all." I think it's pretty clear that Nintendo removed this because of Don Weezo himself beating up a Pikachu in order to catch it, and also simply because Nintendo have always been sticks in the mud in regards to anyone using one of their beloved franchises for parody. Oh well. Electric Soldier Porygon Dub. As mentioned earlier, Electric Soldier Porygon is a controversial episode and has never been aired in English or in any language ever again after its initial airing that sent many children to hospitals due to seizures. It's rumored that an English dub of the episode does exist, and that 4Kids, when dubbing Pokemon, were planning on airing the episode and even edited out the flashing that caused the seizures in the first place, so all good, right? Nope. Nintendo, as usual, are a bunch of sticks in the mud, and decided to slap that mud in Porygon's face and never let him or his evolutions ever see the light of day again, because they somehow think negative connotations of the incident would surface, you know, over 20 years later. In an online Q&A, the late Matty Blaustein, voice actor of Meowth in the English dub, stated that the episode was dubbed and completed, just never aired. Veronica Taylor, the voice of Ash, however, claims that they never dubbed the episode, so it's entirely up in the air and leaves this as a potential lost media candidate. Also, I'm just salty at Nintendo being a bunch of wusses and treating Porygon this way for so long. He deserves respect. Nintendo, I am addressing you directly. Undo your ban on Porygon. He will be silenced no more. Shintaro Furukawa, you are disgracing the beauty that is Porygon. I will not sleep until our boy is presented to us. Bring us the boy. Like, comment, and subscribe. Hall of Origin. The Hall of Origin is an event-only area above the Spear Pillar where Arceus resides. To reach the Hall of Origin, the player must obtain the Azure Flute through Mystery Gift, and go to Spear Pillar after entering the Hall of Fame and obtaining the National Dex. The Azure Flute was never officially distributed, however, therefore it's impossible to reach the Hall of Origins through legitimate means. There also appears to be two different versions of the Hall of Origins, one deemed the fake Hall of Origin, which contains no event, warps, or Arceus. What its purpose is, at the moment, appears to be a mystery, and the reason why Nintendo never followed through with the event is a mystery as well. Probably laziness. Nintendo generally sucks at actually doing events, it seems. Ghost Girl from X and Y. The Ghost Girl in X and Y first appears on the second floor of the Fighting Dojo in Lumino City, in which the lights to the building go on and off a few times, and a mysterious girl appears behind you. She walks, or more accurately, floats by you, and says, "No, you're not the one," then continues moving off screen and disappears. Later in the game, you can find what is presumably the same girl, though in Pokemon it's hard to tell, since, you know, so many NPC trainers have the exact same design. But she tells the player not to talk to her, as she is listening for the elevator for some unknown reason. In Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, deep within the desert, you can find the girl once again, who questions how the player managed to reach that spot. Once again, at the base of Mount Pyre, you can encounter her again, where she repeats her line from X and Y, saying, "No, you're not the one." There really isn't a whole lot left to talk about this one, as the mystery is still a mystery to this day. Reggie noises. In the Pokemon anime, the Pokemon Regirock, Regice, and Registeel make the most crazy sounds ever when they speak, sounding very robotic and, well, just strange. Honestly, I wish I had more to say, but there isn't a whole lot, so I'll go ahead and play an audio clip of their cries from the game and from the anime. It's very wild, and I love it. PSA 10 Charizard. I feel like this pointed iceberg is more significant now than ever with how massively inflated Pokemon card prices have become in the past few months. As someone who used to collect but has since quit due to this exact situation, it's a bit sad to see the state of collecting be overrun by scalpers and hoarders. Don't get me wrong, there were always these people, but now everyone thinks they can just get rich flipping booster boxes and, well, that's all I want to say about that. Back in October of 2020, a PSA 10 First Edition Shadowless Base Set Charizard sold for $220,574, which is absurd, as prior in 2019, the card sold for $36,110. So, look at that gap. Even more so, a complete first edition PSA 10 base set with every single card from the set sold for $107,010 in 2019. So, yeah, the current market for Pokemon is absolutely dumb, and I hope it crashes soon. And that's coming from someone with many early complete master sets. As a collector of many things, I just have one thing to say. Collect for passion, not for value. Hex Maniac. The Hex Maniac is a trainer class that generally focuses on ghost and psychic type Pokemon, and took the place of the original Channeler trainer class that came before them. They generally always have a spooky aura to them, and always mention something paranormal or strange when talked to by your character. There isn't a whole lot more to really say about them, and I'm not really sure why they're even on the iceberg, but there you go. Osmosis Jones. A quick and easy one. In the 2001 film Osmosis Jones, near the end of the movie when Ozzy goes to the bladder to stop Drix from leaving due to plot reasons that I'm not going to get into, you can see a germ on the boat holding a Pikachu. And, yeah, it's straight up a Pikachu, and from what I can tell, Nintendo never said anything about this cameo, probably because it didn't involve beating the poor rodent, and maybe because the movie was distributed and produced by Warner Brothers, who basically had full control over Pokemon at the time in the West. Kadabra's last card was in 2002. This just goes back to the whole Uri Geller thing, so I don't want to repeat myself too much here. Kadabra has only had a handful of cards released, and all in the early days of Pokemon, ending with Skyridge in, well, this point on the iceberg says 2002, but really Skyridge came out in 2003 in North America, so I think it's supposed to be 2003, as a Kadabra card did come out in this set, so yeah, really his last card was in 2003, but maybe it just says that because, you know, it was printed in Japan first in the same set. Anyway, let's go down the list of all of Kadabra's cards, since there aren't really that many. Kadabra has been featured in Base Set, Base Set 2, Rocket, Gym Challenge, Legendary Collection, Expedition, and lastly, Skyridge, which was released in North America in May of 2003, as I stated earlier. Between these years, Kadabra also had three cards released in Japan only, two in Expansion Sheet 3, and one in a set called Pokemon Web. The Pikachu from Yellow can evolve. In its mission to attempt to follow the anime, the Pikachu you obtain in Pokemon Yellow can't evolve and will refuse upon offering it a Thunderstone. To get around your Pikachu's stubbornness, you can trade the Pikachu to another game, evolve it, and trade it back. I personally actually did this as a kid, just out of curiosity, and was very surprised it worked, as I thought the game wouldn't even allow you to trade Pikachu. I still remember to this day, Pikachu's audible cry as you selected him to be traded. It's really sad. They really try to guilt trip you for that one. Unfortunately, this of course loses its ability to follow you, talk to you, partake in the surfing game, and so on. I would assume that if you use Surf with Raichu in yellow, he'll revert back to the default sprite instead of the Pikachu surfing sprite. But I've never personally done it, so I can't say for sure. It would make sense, though. I'm also not sure if trading the Pikachu back without evolving it would result in any issues arising with him following you in-game, or any other interactions with him. So if anybody would like to test that, please let me know. Canalave Library. The Canalave Library is located in the Sinnoh region in Canalave City. Its shelves hold many books of legend and myth surrounding the entire region of Sinnoh, and in some cases, the world as a whole. Many of these books here tell of the Lake Guardians, Arceus, Dialga, Palkia, and Giratina, and more. There are also books on the history and existence of Pokemon, with one book even stating that humans and Pokemon were once one and the same, or that they only came to be separate through biological evolution. Another story states that there was a time when humans and Pokemon had no distinguishable differences. Very strange. This library is also where it mentions that Pokemon and humans used to marry. There isn't anything specific about the library itself that I could find, so I assume it's on the iceberg mainly because of the stories within. Ash appears in Gen 7. Ash simply has a cameo in Pokemon Sun and Moon in the form of a photograph featuring him and Pikachu on the wall of a room inhabited by Mimikyu. Also, the male protagonist's son receives a letter from Ash in the demo for Sun and Moon, which is plenty enough to imply that Ash himself exists in the universe of the games, or at least Sun and Moon. Route 226 Softlock. In Diamond and Pearl, it's possible to get yourself stuck on Route 226 permanently. The way to do this is as follows. You must reach Route 226 with the Pokemon Finian in your party, no fishing rods of any kind in your inventory, and without any Pokemon that can learn or know Surf, Fly, or Teleport. Upon reaching the Meister's Island and completing the trade of your Finian for his Magikarp, and you did all of the above, just save your game, and congratulations, you're now officially stuck here with absolutely zero means of escape. You have no rods to get you into random battles so you can wide out. You have no Pokemon that can transport you anywhere. Nothing. You are stuck. Not entirely sure why it's at the bottom of the iceberg, but there you go. Game Grumps Trainers. Simply put, in Pokemon Let's Go, there are three master trainers for the Pokemon Gastly, Haunter, and Gengar. Their names are Aaron, Danny, and Ross, the names of three of the hosts from the popular YouTube channel Game Grumps. Whether this is coincidence or not is up in the air, but the fact that Aaron is spelled that way, which is fairly uncommon, I think it leans in favor of it being a nod to the popular YouTube channel. Pinky and the Brain. I'm pretty sure this is referencing a very interesting Kids WB commercial in which Ash and the gang stumble upon Pinky and the Brain, two characters who first appeared in Animaniacs, and later had their own series later on. Ash tries to use the Pokedex on them, but the Pokedex is unable to identify them. Brain then says that if they can catch all the Pokemon, they'll be able to rule the world, then challenges Ash in a fight. Ash sends out Charmeleon, Brain charges at Charmeleon only to get smacked away by his tail, then burned to a crisp. Yeah, I have no idea why this is on the iceberg, let alone this far down, but I'm not the one who makes these, so yeah, on to the next. Flame type. Once again, no clue what this is doing on the iceberg, but in Japan, fire type is called flame type. Since this point is so short, I'll include an extra bonus fact. For some reason, in the 2BA Master song, when the singer is naming off the types, they say grass, fire, ground, flame. Yeah, not exactly sure why. Also, he doesn't mention poison, but yeah, fire. So good it gets thrown in there twice. Berry Forest. Located among the Sevii Islands, specifically on Three Island, This forest is notable for regenerating hidden berries. Upon arriving here for the first time, you'll encounter the owner of the game corner, who asks you to help him find his missing daughter, Lestelle, who went looking for berries in the forest. Upon finding her, you must save her from a hypno, which is fantastic, because it gives me a reason to take down a hypno for preying on a young girl like a freak. Sorry, I just really hate hypno. Upon saving her from the crazed, deranged lunatic of a Pokemon, she'll give the player a Lapapa Berry and return home. This location is the only place where players can routinely obtain berries in Pokemon Fire Red and Leaf Green, as berries don't spawn anywhere else throughout Kanto, and since there's no in-game clock in Kanto, the berries regenerate every 512 steps, making berry farming easy. Machoke's muscles broke his skin open. A popular fan theory, though one I've only recently heard about, revolves around Machoke, specifically those red lines on his biceps and forearms that aren't present on Machop or Machamp. Fans have come up with a theory as to what these red lines are, and it's quite graphic. Many believe that these lines are Machoke's skin ripping open, unable to hold within the size of its large muscles. I mean, maybe. I feel like if this was really the case, the people at Nintendo wouldn't be able to hold back their knack for putting really messed up stuff in Pokedex entries, and this would be all over it. But, nope, nothing in the Pokedex about this, but it's still a good theory, regardless. Pokemon Lost Silver. Pokemon Lost Silver was a creepypasta about a gamer who, while awaiting the release of HeartGold and SoulSilver, and upon its release, being unable to purchase it at the time, instead goes to a GameStop to buy a used copy of Silver for the Game Boy Color for $10. That right there is the first immediate sign of the legitimacy of this story, as you'll never find a Pokemon game at a retail chain for under $10, unless it's like Goodwill or something, and even that's a bit of a stretch. Anyway, of course upon firing up the game, things get strange. Basically, it's just a whole bunch of the usual creepypasta video game stuff, complete with the backwards music, sprites appearing uncharacteristically. For example, this one has a Pikachu crying, characters losing limbs. Really, the only thing missing here is the usual hyper-realistic blood and all that. The cool thing about this creepypasta is that you can actually play a ROM hack of Lost Silver, as someone went out of their way to make it, which, that's pretty cool, so I give it credit for going above and beyond. Child Victims. I'm not really sure what this point is referring to, but I'm going to guess it's all the instances of child victims of Pokemon in Pokedex entries. Like, as I said, that disgusting freak Hypno taking a child hypnotized, or Drifloon wandering off with children to lead them to the afterlife, and it goes on and on. There isn't really much more to say about this, that wouldn't be me just reading off more Pokedex entries like I did earlier, so we'll just leave it at that. Some Pokemon just really want to steal your kids away, I guess. Lavender Town's theme. Oh boy, here we go, the big one. In the early days of Pokemon, before the games even hit Western shores and the craze was still only localized in Japan, something happened. Children who played Red and Green began falling ill mysteriously or even committing suicide. It was eventually discovered that all of these children had one thing in common. They had all reached Lavender Town in their copy of the game. Upon further research, it was found that the frequencies used in the Lavender Town theme contained certain pitches that only children and young teens were able to hear, and that this tone triggered something within them to make them act irrationally, developing severe headaches, and again, in some cases, committing suicide. It's unknown how many children died due to Lavender Town Syndrome, and Nintendo quickly recalled every copy they could get their hands on. What they've done with these carts is not known, but they're presumably either destroyed or within Nintendo's archives. The audio was fixed in subsequent copies of the game, and was no longer an issue. Though it is rumored, some of these carts are still out there to this very day, as Nintendo was just unable to get them all back given the overwhelming sales of Pokemon Red and Green. Unknown King. This is a more recent creepypasta that I hadn't heard about before doing this iceberg, but it's about a kid who, on Christmas Eve, receives a copy of Pokemon Silver that is cursed. Also, whoever wrote this story seems to think that the internal battery is part of the Game Boy and not the cartridge itself, as made evident by the sentence, "I remember having good memories of Pokemon Silver, even though my Game Boy internal battery's drainage made it impossible for me to save my progress." Anyway, the player is given a series of directions until finally arriving at the ruins of Alph. Once 3 a.m. came around, the game gave the message that each of his Pokemon was gone, followed by, "The sacrifice of your team has made way for the liberation of the Unknown King." Eventually, the player faces Unknown King and loses, and the player's character in the game is killed by the Unknown King, and the screen fades to black. When suddenly, a sprite of a man appears and says, "You just freed the beast and doomed the human race. I couldn't have done it without you." And that was it. Nothing else happened. The player, though, was somehow left, and I quote, "scarred for life," despite it literally just being a video game. Like, I can't imagine anything being able to actually scar you for life, unless it actually has some sort of legitimate impact, as opposed to just watching sprites in a video game do and say things. Anyway, that was Unknown King, and we got one more to go, so let's do this. Buried Alive and White Hand. In Pokemon Red, Blue, and Yellow, if you speak to the NPC located outside Pokemon Tower, above the Pokemart, they'll ask you if you believe in ghosts. If you answer no, they'll reply, "Ha ha ha, I guess not. That white hand on your shoulder, it's not real." Where this white hand really comes in at, however, is in the realm of the mysterious Pokemon cartridges that also hold Buried Alive, a mysterious NPC that the player can battle at the top of Pokemon Tower. Said to be removed from the retail release of the game, in some instances, Buried Alive has been reinserted and can be encountered by players making their way through the Pokemon Tower. It is considered a trainer and has four, Pokemon, I guess? Well, two, really. It has a Gengar and a Muk, along with two white hands that it sends out individually. Upon defeating Buried Alive, the game is said to crash immediately. Upon losing, Buried Alive will say, "Finally, fresh meat." Then Buried Alive would, and I quote, "drag the player character into the ground surrounding him, and an image of the Buried Alive character devouring the player was to have been shown." Awesome. There isn't really much else left to Buried Alive and White Hand, and I feel we've gone deep enough into the realm of creepypasta, so let's go back to the surface and call it a day on this one. And that was the Pokemon Iceberg. I really appreciate your patience with this one, as it took me quite a while to get around to making. I took a month break after the Super Smash Bros. Iceberg, then finding time to do research and work on the script for this one. Anyway, here it is, and I really hope you enjoyed it. Pokemon means just as much to me as I'm sure it does to many of you. So, many of these things I already knew, and quite a few I got to learn about while researching, which is always nice. Also, thank you again to all of you who subscribed. I think it's amazing that so many people are interested in listening to me talk about anything in these videos, really. And these are all over an hour long, so really, thank you. I'm glad it's really keeping your interest. As for the next video, I'm not really sure. I have an idea for a video that I've always wanted to do, one that I actually had uploaded on this channel years ago, that I'm sure no one knows about, that I'd like to go back and handle more semi-professionally than I did back then. The video is now private, as I feel it doesn't match the current tone that I'm trying to set for the channel, but I'd like to redo it and get that in the works here pretty soon. It'll certainly be my shortest video, most likely clocking in around 30 minutes, but that also means it'll take less time to make, so I'm thinking of probably doing the music for that one myself. I'm also in the process of moving, by the way, so by the time my next video comes out after this one, I should already be moved, and at that point my video production speed should increase dramatically, as I'll be able to record whenever I want, as opposed to being on a very strict timeline where I'm currently at. Anyway, thank you all so much again for watching, for subscribing, for commenting, for liking. everything, really. It all helps out so much, and I just love interacting with you guys and commenting and replying. So take care, enjoy this one, and I hope you all have a swell day.